Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to Star Wars Explained. Today, I am very excited to be joined by the author of the latest Star Wars novel to come out, Shadow of the Sith. I really, really enjoyed it. You can watch my review, which came out a couple weeks ago. We are going to be potentially talking light spoilers in the book. We're not going to, you know, ruin everything. But if you haven't read it yet, this is your warning. But please welcome Adam Christopher to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we got to meet very briefly at Star Wars Celebration, which was exciting for me because I had just finished reading Shadow of the Sith before coming out. So I was like, oh, it's him. It's Adam Christopher.
That was a good show. Yeah, that was my first celebration. Man, it was epic.
Yeah. Did you have a good time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's like, and then I'm going to San Diego Comic-Con end of next month. It's like, we get to do it all over again. That's brilliant.
Yeah. What was your favorite thing that you saw or got to do?
I mean, cosplay always amazes me. I know, you know, Star Wars has such amazing cosplay, but the imagination that people come up with, you know, there was a Nightmare Before Jabba's Palace cosplay, and there's kind of mashups. There was a Top Gun one, which is Top Tie. It's just like, how do people think of those things? It's amazing.
Yeah, super fun.
Yeah.
Well, we've already kind of done a little bit of ice breaking, but I always like to start my interviews with this question to just kind of get a sense of your Star Wars fandom a little bit. So my favorite Star Wars character is Biggs Darklighter, and I like to know what is your favorite kind of minor or background character in Star Wars, someone that you think potentially you might be the biggest fan of?
I think it really has to be Tali Lintra from The Last Jedi.
Pilot, yes, young, I like it.
Yeah, she's like a young ace A-wing pilot. She leads the attack runs at the beginning of the movie. Unfortunately, she gets blown up by Kylo Ren when he attacks the hangar, which is like, it's such a bummer because, you know, in a franchise that often needs more good female characters, they kind of blow her up, which is why I wrote a backup story in Star Wars Adventures, mm-hmm. which was the all-ages comic from IDW, and I chose Tali because I thought, she's got a story to tell. You know, she's young, but she's like such a leader and such a strong character. Yeah. It turns out, though, when I said that online, like there's a legion of fans of hers, which was really cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's always the thing is you can say, my favorite character is this person that I don't think anyone's ever heard of. And a dozen people will be like, yeah, they're the best. So, yeah, Tali's definitely one of them. Yeah. I felt the same way. I remember in the build-up to The Last Jedi, I was like, yes, an A-Wing and a great-looking A-Wing pilot. Like, this is going to be awesome. And then they just pulled the rug right out and killed everyone.
Yeah. Oh, well.
But hopefully, yeah, hopefully we'll see some more Tali stories in the future.
Yeah.
Well, you got to write Shadow of the Sith, which was a very thick book, I would say, an important book. It's also a book that I felt like was hearkening back to the Star Wars Legends days where we got novels that told very big stories that included the main cast of characters from the original trilogy. What was it like to tackle that story? Or a story like that, I should say.
Yeah, it's like, you're quite right. It's almost like I couldn't believe it when they said, well, why don't we do this book, which is Luke and Lando chasing Ochi of Bestoon, chasing Rey and her parents, being, you know, the story that Lando tells to Rey when they meet in The Rise of Skywalker. I was like, and I remember when I first saw The Rise of Skywalker in the cinema, it's like that really struck me when he just mentions it. Oh yeah, me and Luke were chasing Ochi and looking for a wayfinder. We never found it. And then it's like, I get to tell that story, which is, you know, amazing. I'm a, you know, as a Star Wars fan, that's just unbelievable. But also I was aware that, yeah, this is a largely unexplored area in this, you know, the Star Wars saga, where the book is set 19, 20 something years after Return of the Jedi, and then another 19 years, whatever it is, before The Force Awakens. So it's like right in the middle. Mm-hmm. There's been a few comics, there's a couple of books, but it's really kind of this unexplored territory. So I knew that I had the potential to write a story which really did something, you know, with the characters and with the story. So I kind of treated it like this is episode 6.5. You know, if Return of the Jedi is 6 and The Force Awakens is 7, this is episode 6.5. So as a fan and a reader of Star Wars books, what would I want in that story if I read it or saw it? So I kind of had this epic, like you said, it was a big book, this kind of epic cinematic approach. It's like, let's make this amazing Star Wars adventure, which can do something with characters that don't appear that often. You know, Luke Skywalker in a main canon novel, there's not many of them. Likewise with Lando. So yeah, I was like, okay, let's go for it. Let's go big.
Yeah, you've touched on so many things I want to ask about, but yeah, that ability to bring in the big characters and yeah, do kind of an episode 6.5. I've really enjoyed a lot of the Star Wars books up to this point, but it did feel like they were kind of waiting for the sequel trilogy before they really explored the major characters. And this one felt like, you know, we got to tell a planet hopping adventure that was going across the galaxy, wasn't focused on just one or two planets. And it's just that took me back to those days of reading Heir to the Empire for the first time in the late 90s for me. So it was really pulling on my heartstrings in that way. So you already mentioned, yeah, you got to write Luke Skywalker, Lando Calrissian. You had a young Rey and you had a young Ben Solo. Like those first couple chapters are just like, oh my gosh, they're really doing all this.
Yeah.
Which character was the most daunting to approach?
It was actually Luke Skywalker, because Luke is in a really interesting place at this point. You know, he's probably the most powerful person in the galaxy, really. But he's aware of that in himself. And with that awareness also comes the knowledge of what the Force can do and what can happen if you kind of stray from the path of the light. Because, you know, he's got the ultimate personal experience of what happens. So everything that he was doing in the book, really, as I was writing it, I quickly became aware of he was actually much more powerful than I thought he was. But also he has this kind of, I know it's from a different franchise, but like, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. He knows his own power. So everything that he does in the book, he's making a decision, which is, you know, what he could do and what he should do. Which is interesting. And especially, you know, his progression through even the original trilogy is really interesting, because in A New Hope, he's, you know, the farm boy from Tatooine. In Empire Strikes Back, he's the competent rebel officer and pilot who's learning to become a Jedi. You know, because he believes, at least at that point, that he's got this family tradition of being, you know, I'm going to be a Jedi like my father kind of thing, before he finds out who his father is. And then Return of the Jedi, he's different again. He's like, he's the Jedi master. So even in those three films, he's like three different kind of strong characters. Then we see him in the end of The Mandalorian season 2, when he rescues Grogu, and also Book of Boba Fett, where he's training Grogu, or starting to train it. And there again is two other sides. You've got in Mandalorian the kind of ultimate Jedi warrior, where he takes out all the droids. And then in Book of Boba Fett, he's the calm, serene Jedi master. So that kind of balance between what he wants to be as a Jedi master and the self-control that that requires, but at the same time, he's the farm boy from Tatooine. Like he, unlike Jedi of the past, he wasn't a youngling and a Padawan and kind of grew up in the Jedi Order. He was a kid from the desert. So Shadow of the Sith, he's probably about 40 years old. Things, he's been through all the original saga and he's got his temple running and he's trying to recreate the Jedi Order. So he was kind of difficult because it's like, well, he's kind of very powerful, but he can't use his powers because he too much because he knows what can happen if he pushes it too far. And it's almost like there's always another solution to something that he's thinking of. Like he's in life or death situations, but that doesn't mean he's just going to race him with his lightsaber and, cut everything to pieces. He judges what needs to be done and what he should do as a Jedi because he's representing like a, this kind of higher order, which also like he's a self-trained pretty much. So he's recreating this from scratch, which he's also aware of. We saw him build a temple in Book of Boba Fett, and he's kind of building up his younglings and the new generation. So yeah, he was kind of interesting and difficult, but like really, Skywalker. I mean, come on, he's the main character of Star Wars. It's like, how could I not love being able to write someone like that?
I love the way that you put it with the Spider-Man quote, and he's struggling with what he could do and should do, and he has all of this other stuff on his mind that most other people in the galaxy don't have to think about, which I was why I really, really liked pairing him up with Lando, because at least in my interpretation of the story, Luke has the bigger picture to worry about. He hears whispers of the Sith returning, and he's like, well, I gotta shut that down. And Lando is the one that's really, really focused on there's this family that we need help. And he kept kind of like grounding Luke and that, like, yeah, that stuff's important, but also the family and the people right in front of us. Can you talk about Luke and Lando together and what you wanted their relationship to be like? Because that's not a pair up we get very often.
Right. And again, it goes back to when I saw The Rise of Skywalker and Lando talks about it. And my initial reaction was, what do you mean Luke and Lando went on a disadventure? It's like, that is not a pairing I expected. They have a more of a history in the comics and things, but certainly in the original trilogy, do they even exchange a word? I don't know. They kind of shake hands at the end of Return of the Jedi. So they were definitely. I knew going in it was going to be like an odd couple, especially because, as I mentioned, Luke is now gone off on his path, which is the Jedi Order, the temple, learning about Sith and Jedi, because of course also during this period he's searching for Sith relics and Jedi relics and the kind of the history of both sides. Lando, on the other hand, is well, in a very different place because we know him as the gambler and the kind of playboy and businessman, entrepreneur, that kind of thing. But he had a tragedy where his daughter is kidnapped, which happens about 6 years before Shadow of the Sith. So it's a personal tragedy that he turns into this mission, this quest, because obviously he wants to get his daughter back. The galaxy is a big place. And it turns his life upside down, but it kind of gives him something to focus on. Unfortunately, by the time we get to Shadow of the Sith, it's been 6 years. He hasn't found her, and it's like, well, how many leads can you chase? How much help can you ask for? So he's drifting back into his old ways, not because he's forgotten her or anything, but because it's easy, and it's like. You can just go on, or he goes on autopilot. When we first meet him, he's at a gambling table in a cantina, because it's like this is just easy for him. He is in control of that situation, even when everything else in his life is kind of is out of his control. So it's a very easy place to be. So this kind of discovery of Ochi and these whispers of the Sith that he discovers, you know, he's the one that overhears all that, and he goes to Luke, because this, like, obviously Luke is the only person he knows who can, you know, take care of that kind of situation. But also it reinvigorates his personal quest to find his daughter. So although it's like, well, we've got to help this family because there's, you know, the mother and the father and this young girl who he obviously kind of sees his own daughter in that situation, he's like, this is the thing that, and he's aware of this, this is the thing that is going to get him out of his rut. He's going to help this family. He's going to rescue the girl. We're going to fight the Sith, and he's going to be back at it out in the galaxy, find his daughter. So through tragedy comes kind of personal, I don't know, growth is the wrong word to describe it, but it was interesting because Lando, you know, he's one of the main characters, but I could develop his character. I could do something with him that we haven't seen on screen, which is unusual for like a main character. You know, you have to, normally you take them and you kind of do things and you put them back where you found them. But because this book is like right in that middle of that wilderness, we could do something. So yeah, and then him and Luke, they're not chalk and cheese, but they're not best friends, right? Like, they're kind of like work friends, you know, and then you're at the office and you're kind of all friendly, and then suddenly you go to something like a social event, and then you find yourself, you're on your own with them, and you realize you don't quite know who they are, really. You don't know them like a friend. So there's a little bit of kind of friction and a little bit of working out, like, you know, because Luke is like, well, what are you doing here? This is dangerous. And Lando's like, oh, but I've got this thing for you. And it's like just the little stuff. But then obviously they've known each other for, what, 20 years at this point. So there's still a familiarity and a kind of camaraderie, even if they're not buddy buddies. It means they're quite different. When they go on this thing together, it's not just two people. It's like two different aspects on the same mission, but like they both see things differently.
Mm-hmm. And I loved the friction. I thought it played very well of, yeah, Luke is a Jedi master. He's more stoic and, you know, minimalist. And Lando is obviously very flashy and everything is over the top with his ship and his capes, yeah, and everything. I thought that the two of them interacting was great. You also just kind of verbally twisted the knife a little bit, because this story is a bit of a tragedy, and there's a lot of potential, for example, for Lando. This is a story where, you know, we know kind of how it ends when it comes to this family with Dathan and Miramir and Rey. So how was that? What was the biggest challenge in writing a story where you knew that it had an ending, and were there any advantages to writing a story that has that kind of set ending?
Yeah. Rey's parents don't know what's going to happen. I mean, that sounds obvious, but like, they don't know what's going to happen, but the reader does, because it's established. So I really had to forget about the ending and focus on what the family were doing to save Rey, because they know that Ochi is after Rey. Like, Rey is what the Emperor wants. They know that. And Dathan and Miramir are really just trying their best to save their daughter. So they're like, they've got plans and ways of getting away from Ochi and the kind of the crew that's after them. For the ending, I'd left it. That was like the last thing that I wrote, because I knew what I had to do, but I almost like disconnected it, because it was like, well, this is going to be a really sad ending. This is like, you know, it's a bad ending for them. And I wrote the final scene with them, which is like, it's that 5 seconds you see in The Rise of Skywalker, that flashback. I mean, I must have written about 6 different versions. I had kind of Ochi's point of view. I had Dathan's point of view. I had Miramir's point of view. Like, I had them all together, just trying to see like what would be the most impactful and meaningful, like meaningful way to do it, because, you know, this is the end of the road for them. And a tragedy within the story, because you know they know that one mistake they make and it's all over, and they have some successes and some victories, and then suddenly it goes wrong, and it's almost like that ending, like Ochi catches up with them, spoiler, it happens, but like it's just that sudden, it's like that's it, that's the end of the road, they've got this great plan and then that's it, which I thought was like probably the best way to do it, because like as the characters in the story don't know what's going to happen, the reader knows what's going to happen, but like how can I surprise the reader, how can I do something, they know what's coming but they're not expecting it, was the way I kind of looked at it, but yeah, they were just this nice couple, you know, looking after Ray, and yeah, they came to a sticky end, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was.
Come on.
Yeah, it's not your fault. You had to. Well, it was. I thought you did a good job of using that dramatic irony to occasionally remind the reader and be like, oh, things could have been so much different. I'm going to ask a question that again. I'll just remind people: this is a little spoilery, just in case, but. You know, Luke and Lando never really catch up to Dathan and Miramir. Was there ever a version in your head where they did, or what was the thought process behind making that choice?
Yeah, I mean, if we go a little bit spoilery, Lando was a safer option. He has more interaction with them than Luke does, I think. I don't think I really ever considered Luke having such a direct contact, because it would just kind of explode continuity. Although, like, you know, there's hints. There's dialogue in The Last Jedi where he's like, when Rey and Luke meet, and Rey's like, so, you know, I can't remember the exact line, but like, who are you, Rey from nowhere or something? Like, he seems to know her name before she says it. But like that's ambiguous, because he's you know, he can use the Force, and there's conversations we didn't see. But there's little bits and pieces where I hinted at that maybe they, you know, he has some idea of what's going on.
I'll say that I like that kind of Luke is under the wrong impression the whole time of why the Sith are after this family.
Right.
And felt like there were enough little pieces that when Rey shows up and she does say, I'm from Jakku, that he can be like, just start to figure it out a little bit. And then, of course, once he's one with the Force, he probably is all-knowing to some sense. But.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, Luke is solving a mystery himself in the book. There's Ochi of Bestoon, there's the Sith, and there's his family, and he's trying to put it all together because, you know, he's having these visions of Exegol, which he doesn't know where it's coming from. And, you know, Lando, he's making his own discoveries at the same time that Lando comes to him. So Luke, yeah, it was kind of like Luke doesn't know what's going on. That's what they're trying to work out.
Mm. Yeah, it's one of those fun kind of noir things where there's two mysteries that always wind up being the same mystery.
Right, yeah.
So as an avid Star Wars book reader, I try to read everything that comes out. I found Shadow of the Sith to be very rewarding. As a reader, there were a lot of connections to not just other books, but comics and all kinds of things. Was there a connection that you were especially proud of or excited to make?
There's a tiny one, which is meaningless. This is the great thing about...
I think those are the best ones.
Well, yeah. So it's like, if you recognize it, that's amazing. And you get more out of it. If you don't, it doesn't matter. You can still enjoy the story. This is the whole point, I think. I don't try and just cram stuff in because I'm a fan and I want to mention everything. But there's a connection to the 1978 Los Angeles Times comic strip, newspaper comic strip, in the cantina where they order drinks, they order Red Dwarves. And the bartender reminds them to sip them slow, you'll live longer. That's out of the LA Times. Because I was reading it, I was like, that's really cool. And I knew I was going to have a kind of cantina, not really cantina, it's a drinking establishment. It's a bit more high class than a cantina. But yeah, I kind of like, it was very organic. You know, there's Dark Legends by George Mann is a big, sort of plays a big part. There's obviously the Aftermath trilogy, because Kaiser is from the interludes in the last two Aftermath books. But it was never like, I'm going to read this book and put this thing in, because it's really obscure. And if people get it, then they'll get bonus points. Like, I wrote, you know, I've written other tie-ins as well, you know, Stranger Things and things. And I've never just put stuff in for the sake of it. Because as a reader, a fan, I love seeing those things. And I kind of geek out when I recognize something. But also, it's important that it works, you know, on its own.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the Red Dwarf thing is something that went over my head. I when I read a book, I make a bunch of notes. And I know that I wrote down probably like 15 drink names. You named so many drinks. And so I haven't had the chance to go back and look up all that stuff yet. So I know I wrote Red Dwarf down, but I didn't know where it was from off the top of my head. So thanks for helping me there. But I absolutely want to talk about Kaiza. And that was something that felt rewarding, as just, oh, we're finally following up on the Acolytes of the Beyond and her story. So how did that come about? Was that something that you wanted to do, or did that come from Lucasfilm of like, hey, let's tie this up? Or I'm just curious about the process.
I mean, I definitely felt that the Acolytes of the Beyond really suited this time period. I mean, Aftermath is obviously set after Return of the Jedi. But the fact that Luke and Lor San Tekka are searching for artifacts and relics of the Sith and the Jedi, the Acolytes of the Beyond, that's exactly what they were trying to do. So they were a group of, I mean, they're described as kind of kids who thought, they weren't force sensitive, but they thought they could get the dark side powers by finding relics and artifacts. So like lightsabers and anything really, you know, Sith related. But of course, they were just like, I mean, they were thieves. It's like they were a cult, and they were dangerous, you know, murderers, thieves, criminals. But they seemed really cool. And it's like, it really kind of mirrored what Luke and Lor San Tekka are doing. I don't know, may have come from Lucasfilm. You know, they kind of, for the brief was really, it was just tell that story of Luke and Lando chasing Ochi. Chasing Ray's parents, like that's it. And then, but of course, in discussions and things, you're like, well, maybe we could do this, maybe we could do that. So it probably came out of that, I think. Because I know I did have another group in the book originally, which I changed because they were going to be used somewhere else. But yeah, the Acolytes are just really cool. And Kaiser, I think, is a really good character. The interludes and the Aftermath books are really cool because they're like, they go back to that thing of the character that's only on screen for 5 seconds, and they've got and then the action figure comes out, and they've got a whole thing. So, you know, Empire Strikes Back, the bounty hunters, you know, as a kind of 8-year-old, I was fascinated by that because you get Bosk and Forlom and Zookas and IG-88. They're on screen for 10 seconds, and then there's an action figure. And a toy and things. So when I was their age, it's like, these are the characters I can play with the most because I can create their whole world because we know nothing about them. So their whole story is in my head and I can use the toys and play with it. So that was a kind of fascination for me. And of course, Star Wars is great for that because there are so many characters who are in it for a split second, but they've got a whole thing. It's like a design and a costume and, you know. So Kaiser was one of those. It's like, she's in... We kind of see her origin a little bit in interludes in Aftermath. But that's it. Just like, well, what's she doing now? It's like 20 years later.
We're definitely getting kind of an Aftermath renaissance with Cobb Vanth and Kaiza now and all the Acolytes. And I think that choosing the Acolytes is such a great idea because, you know, we see that Kaiza is affected by the Sith, but not the one we're expecting. And Ochi as well is, you know, affected by the Sith, but is not Sith himself. So I thought that was a really smart way to include the Sith, the shadow of the Sith, without being too direct with it. And I really loved that aspect of the villains.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. It's like, yeah, this is the shadow of the Sith. It's the echoing power that they've left behind. Luke senses one aspect of it. Kaiser is another aspect of it. Ochi is another aspect of it. And then we've got, you know, the Sith Eternal and Exegol. And also at this point, very much active and building the great comeback kind of in the background, hidden away. So, yeah, Shadow of the Sith is the title. When it came to me, I was like, yeah, this is like, it's their echoing power. It's like really powerful. It's like the dark side, you know, this mm-hmm. is powerful stuff.
And there's another, the one thing that, not the one thing, but I remember this one moment vividly of reading the book and another Sith connection. You bring in Darth Noctis's lightsaber. And I just remember, I was kind of reading about the Scimitar lightsaber for a second. It just dawned on me. I'm like, oh my God, that's from the Dark Legends book, from George Mann's stories that are, you know, kind of, they're in-universe legends until they're not. And I loved that you brought something in that wasn't strictly canon, and now you're playing with those in-universe legends and, you know, what's real, what's not. That was so much fun. So what was the driving force behind that?
I mean, I love Dark Legends and also Myths and Fables. I think George Mann is such a good author. He's really cool. And the idea that those books, they're not canon, but like, what if they are? They're fairy tales within the Star Wars universe.
Tales within a fairy tale.
Right. And like, whatever basis of fact there may have been, these are the kind of legends that have passed down and they're now told, you know, around the campfire kind of thing. So, yeah, Darth Noctis. Because there's the image, like Dark Legends and Myths and Fables, they're illustrated. So each story has this amazing sort of painting. And the one for that story, forget the title, but it's Darth Noctis and Darth Sangus. Like this evil Sith figure with the scimitar lightsaber. And I was like, that is so cool. But like, also, I was aware when I was doing the outline, I'm just going to put stuff in and like, they're going to tell me to just take it out. It's like, no. Got left in.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, cool. Let's go for it. So I kind of made it the kind of feature. And it's, yeah, like, I'm trying to imagine like the, you know, the Hasbro, they do the Elite, whatever it's called, lightsabers.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to imagine like the curved one, like a scimitar blade, how they do it. That would be amazing. Defying physics, or they all defy physics. But yeah. That's just really cool. It's like, it's another connection. If you know Dark Legends, awesome. If you don't, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter because we cover it. And yeah, I love the idea of taking stuff which is not canon and making it canon. Because it's like, it's the power.
Because you can.
I can, yeah.
That's why I call stories like that rewarding, is that, yeah, you don't have to have read Dark Legends or the Aftermath trilogy to appreciate this story. But man, is it fun to see that stuff come back.
It's like at the beginning, or near the book, at the beginning of the book, there's like the scene where there's this, the Sith Eternal are chanting the names of all the Sith Lords. And I was like, honestly, the original draft was maybe a page. I was just like, okay, who we got? We've got Revan, we've got Noctis, we've got Shah, Tyrannus. Like, I just like it going, like, go through. This is where I did go through like a Wikipedia listing. Like, okay, who's the most obscure Darth something I can find? But I kind of restrained myself in the end and like cut it down because it was a little bit ridiculous. that's the fun thing. Like, I'm allowed, I think every Star Wars author is allowed to have a bit of fun sometimes and just kind of like go to town. But that's one of my favorite scenes, actually.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. Like that. So many times I would just kind of like perk up while reading it. They're talking about the Sith of ancient times and like what names are in here. And yeah, I think did you put Sanguis in there?
Yeah.
I think you dropped Sanguis there. So then that was a fun connection. A hint kind of to what's coming, without being overt about it. So yeah, and I think Shadow of the Sith did a really great job of balancing all of those kind of like fun little teases, little Easter eggs to find, but also, you know, it's a pulpy adventure, a tragedy. It's got something to say like all Star Wars stories do. I thought you just nailed that Star Warsy balance to make a really, really fun book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about Star Wars is like, we love it because it's a Western, it's a samurai movie, it's a war movie, it's a swashbuckling adventure. It's the car chase movie, it's the heist movie, it's everything. You know, it's fantasy, it's wizards, you know, space wizards with laser swords. It's everything there. And I tried to really, like I said, if this is episode 6.5, you know, what would people want out of episode 6.5? So thank you so much for your very kind.
Sure. That was going to be my closing, but right before we started this interview, I saw that you tweeted that your original manuscript was 60% longer. So does that mean that, I don't know, somewhere down the line, you could do like an episode 6.75?
So it actually, yeah, the manuscript I handed in was like 150,000 words. And I think the final is like 160,000 words. Clay added more. I mean, there's loads of stories to tell. I'm not worried about that. But yeah, it was like, and I apologize, like I seem to do it. I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry. This is a long book. This is like, it's long. So to my editor, Elizabeth, I was like, you're going to have to brace yourself. I kind of gave a full warning in 4 weeks. Like, it's going fine. It's quite long. But she was like, okay, whatever length there has to be. Yeah, and like it turns out to be quite a big book.
That no complaints
from me. Keep the word count for the next one. I mean, go on.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for giving me part of your evening. Where can people follow you online? And also, what non-Star Wars books have you written that you would recommend to a Star Wars fan?
Right. So you can find me on Twitter at Ghostfinder, which is actually Star Wars canon because there's the Ghostfinder fleet, which is, so now I'm stuck with it. My website is adamchristopher.me. And I did a book called Made to Kill a few years ago. It's about a robot detective in 1960s Hollywood who's actually a robot assassin, but he doesn't know it because he's only got a 24-hour memory tape. And I always recommend that because like it's short, fun, retro flavored, noir-y science fiction. So definitely check that out if you fancy something that's not Star Wars.
That I honestly, you sold me right there. I'm gonna pick that up. That sounds great. So awesome. I'll put links to all of that down in the description. Thank you again, Adam, for joining us and telling us a little bit about your process. Thank you all for watching or listening, and may the Force be with you.